June 3rd, 2012, in Laguna Beach. And we're going to look at Bhagavad Gita. To look at just a part of this verse, text 18 of chapter 6. No, not 18. Sorry, 20-23. Where Krishna says, in the stage of perfection called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless, transcendental happiness, realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulty. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. Would that be nice to be free from all miseries? Anybody like that idea? Boundless happiness? Anybody like that idea? Is that appealing? Or do we want balance on our happiness? Anybody want bounded happiness? Anybody here want to be affected by the material miseries and having limits to their happiness? Because you don't have to stay in this class then. Now, it's interesting that Krishna says here that part of the way to experience boundless transcendental happiness and to be free from all miseries arising from material contact is to do something called relish and rejoice in the self. That sounds interesting? I don't know what relish is. Usually we use the word relish for eating. In fact, relish is like another name for pickle. Something that adds flavor and spice, condiment, and relish. To really enjoy something and rejoice. To rejoice in the self. And words used for this, I find three different places where this concept is described, and the Sanskrit for each of them. One is atma tuskiti. Tushti means to be satisfied. Atma is self. Atma rati. Rati means love. Actually, Rati is a name for the wife of Cupid. So, Atma Rati, to love yourself. And Atma Rama. Rama means pleasure. To take pleasure in yourself. Interesting. So, if we really are satisfied, loving, and taking pleasure in the self, we will find there unlimited happiness and freedom from material miseries. So, you don't have to raise your hands, it's sort of an embarrassing question, but do you like yourself? You know, most of us aren't really sure if we like ourselves or not. One of the biggest sections in the bookstores are the self-help section. Self-improvement section, and people take seminars, they read books, etc. How to become better, how to be a better person. Or we may look at other people. Someone said to me the other day, Camila, I wish I could be like you. I said, no, you don't. So we may look at other people and think, I wish I could be like that person. Or I wish I could change this thing about myself. Maybe we wish we were quieter and we could just sit at the back of the room and keep our mouth closed. Or maybe we wish we were noisier and that we could stand at the front of the room and open our mouth. Maybe we wish that we were more cautious. Maybe we wish that we were more decisive. So we generally have things about ourselves that we don't like. What to speak of if we're identifying the self as the body? Most of us don't look in the mirror and go, yes, exactly what I wanted. Right? And if we did, then the whole cosmetic and hair dye industry and plastic surgery industry would go out of business. So most people aren't feeling that they can really rejoice in their selves. And then we're afraid of rejoicing in ourselves. We think, well, wait a minute, what in the world is this lady talking about? What happened to humility? Doesn't humility mean that you give up all self-love? That you stop thinking of yourself? That you don't care anything anymore about yourself, you become selfless. Even materialistic people say that being selfless is a virtue, don't they? Can you imagine, even in our secular, I'm sorry to say, materialistic education system, can you imagine everybody talking about being selfish? No. So one problem, on the one hand, is we may find it hard to like ourselves. We may say, well, there's a lot about myself I don't like, honestly. And often there's more about myself, if I'm honest, that I don't like than that I do like. And that maybe a lot of my life is in putting on a show that I'm not exactly who I am, so that other people will at least not dislike. And on the other hand, so on the one hand, we're kind of uncomfortable. We wish we could like ourselves. And then on this end, we're thinking, well, maybe I'm not even supposed to like myself. Maybe I'm supposed to just be selfless. Or maybe even I'm supposed to despise myself. So there are many people who think that humility means to despise ourselves. But here Krishna is saying that one of the ways to find unlimited happiness and get free of miseries is to really like yourself. I mean, really, really rejoice. Not just like, I'm okay. You know, there was a book like that a long time ago, I'm okay, you're okay. But not just, yeah, I'm okay. But you rejoice in the self. In fact, one word for saintly persons is atmarama. Those who are finding pleasure in self. Those who are fully satisfied in self. Well, first thing here is to understand who is the self. Krishna's not going to tell us to rejoice in something that's unrejoiceable. And my dear friends, the body's pretty unrejoiceable. Even the most attractive parts of our body, our eyes, our hair, you know, if you just had them separate, they wouldn't be very rejoiceable. If you just had a bunch of hair and some eyeballs. I mean, even if you've got a really nice complexion, you know, just some skin. Yeah, sorry. Even if you've got the most beautiful body. Still, the body's not really very nice. You'd say why it's not very nice. But that would be even more depressing than telling you it's not nice. Should I tell you why the body's not very nice? If you don't know why the body's not very nice, should I tell you it's really bad news? The body. Krishna explains this later on in Bhagavad Gita. I think it's 13th or 15th. I can't remember which one it is. Chapter. Where he says that we get a gross body that's based on the mind. We get a body that's suited to our mind. Our body is actually the gross manifestation of our desires. And if you think about really what the body is, it says something really sad about our desires. Does everybody follow that? Just like you can buy a house. Now, some people buy a very beautiful house with gardens, etc. Other people buy a house that's a piece of junk. Now, you can say they do that according to how much money they have, but it's not only that. It's how much money they have and also their desires, what they find attractive. So this body is a house that we have purchased by our karma. And our karma means our desires as exemplified by our actions. So really, pretty much we can say that everything in this body is nasty. Again, I'm sorry. I have to say this. It gets better. Don't worry. I don't stay in this place. So therefore, it's very hard to love the body. It's very hard to relish in the self if we think the self is the body. Because the body really isn't very nice. Even if you think it's really nice, I will warn you that as you get older, you will be disillusioned. When I first joined the Hare Krishna movement, my mother said to me, "You are much too young to be disillusioned." I said, "It's far better to be disillusioned early." So that can't be the self that Krishna is talking about. All right, what about the basis of the body, which is the mind? So the scriptures say that we have the mind and body together have four problems. One is imperfect senses. So I can only perceive things that are very close in time and space. I really can't perceive something that happened a long time ago or that happened very far away. What to speak of if you put those together? Of course, modern science likes to convince us that they know exactly what happened, you know, 10 billion gazillion years ago when the universe was created, but, you know, how do you disprove it or prove it? I had someone give a video to our school once, the creation of the universe, and the kids were laughing and they said, "Who had the camera?" But our senses are very limited. If you want to say how far away the stars are, I mean, how do you know? What are you going to do? Take a yardstick and measure it. You know, if you see in a museum that this star is 10 million light years away, I mean, how do they know? Our senses are very imperfect. They're very, very limited. And they only function properly under certain conditions. It gets a little too dark, it gets a little too noisy. Right? Or if they get dry out, or if we're a little sick, and they don't function so well anymore. So then we make mistakes. It's pretty hard to go even for a whole day without making mistakes. But to speak of a week, and sometimes we make serious mistakes. And often we make embarrassing mistakes. I had recently been at a festival where I shared a room with two other ladies, one of whom I'd never met before. And then I just saw one of these ladies again a week ago in Los Angeles. And she said, "Oh, how have you been since the last time I saw you?" And I said, "Oh, when was the last time I saw you?" And she said, "Oh, at that festival 2 weeks ago." So we make mistakes, right? And then we're illusioned. I see a lamppost at night, I think it's a person. And then the most embarrassing thing of all is that we cheat. So I've asked this to many people. Who here would say that they're really an honest person? Anybody prepared to raise their hand? Wow, we have most people are not willing to say that they're honest. But most of us know I'm not fully honest. There's some times when I'm not honest. And often I'm not honest with myself. Am I the only one with this problem? That I tell myself I have certain motives and I tell myself something, but boy, it's not really true. So this is the nature of the mind.
And plus the mind's going all over the place, jumps here and jumps there. If you've ever seen a monkey, the mind is something like that. Or a very young child, 1-2-year-old child, the mind is something like that. In fact, the scriptures, the Bhagavatam, compare the mind to a wild animal. So many, many years ago, we ended up taking care of a wild animal. We were in Detroit, and a mother opossum dropped one of her babies. She only had like 12 babies at the time. And one of them fell off of her back and was crying. The mother somehow didn't hear it. And so our kids and our students said, can we take care of the baby? I said, okay. So we took care of the baby. But it was always a wild animal. It never became a tame animal. And as soon as it grew up a little bit, it wanted to go off in the woods. It didn't have any sense of gratitude that we took care of it. So the mind is something like that. No matter what you give it, it always wants to go someplace else. It's not grateful for all your time and attention. It doesn't leave you alone. It doesn't leave you in peace. And the mind can think very strange and, how should we say it, unpleasant things. Again, I don't know about your mind, but I know my mind doesn't always think the thoughts I wish it would think. My mind often thinks very critical thoughts about myself or other people, or envious thoughts, or has foolish desires. I really wouldn't want all the contents of my mind to be broadcast to the general public. Sometimes it's quite embarrassing. Where did that thought come from? So that can't be the self that Krishna is telling us to rejoice in either. And once we understand that, Krishna is not speaking about either the body or the mind, then we can have a little bit more understanding about how we can really love ourselves and how love of ourselves is perfect humility. So who are we if we're not the body and the mind? Who is this self? So Krishna's talked about this earlier in the Bhagavad Gita. It says, Na jayate niyate vakadachid nayam bhutva bhavita vana huyaha ajo nitya chastrito yam karana namanite anyamanish. You, the self, are that being that's never born and never dies, that's eternal, that can't be damaged by any weapon or any circumstances. Something that's beyond the body and the mind. So understanding that I am something beyond the body and the mind is the most essential understanding in order to achieve this boundless transcendental happiness and freedom from misery that frankly everybody wants. All the advertisements, you can analyze every single advertisement. It's either promising you happiness or freedom from distress, which are not exactly the same thing. Aren't they? Buy this product, go to this place, use this services, whatever, and we'll free you from some distress or we'll give you some happiness. So the first step is understanding that I'm something different from the body and mind. I'm an eternal spiritual being. And it's such an important step because it's interesting that psychologists have studied that every decision a person makes in life is based upon who they think they are. How we identify ourselves. So if we see, really, I'm not this body. I'm not this mind. I'm something else. I mean, just a logical experience. My body doesn't look the same as it did when I was 20, or what to speak of when I was 2 or 5 or whatever. But I feel like I'm the same person. I don't feel that I'm getting old inside. I just don't. It's often shocking to look in the mirror and see my mother's face looking back at me. You know, who stuck her there? Where did she come from? So I have a sense of continuing identity. Even though the body undergoes radical changes. I mean, if we took, except for those of you who are little children, a couple of them here, who are very nicely behaved, by the way, thank you. So if we took everyone's baby picture here and put them up, we'd have a hard time matching it, wouldn't we? It's a radical change. It's not just like a balloon, you know, our body didn't just like grow like that. It's change. But I have the same sense of identity. And my mental processes change. I hope they've changed since I was two. But I have the same sense of continuing identity. So who is that I? That's me. And that's the self that Krishna is saying to relish and rejoice in. That's the self that we should become satisfied in. That's a self that we can love. Because that's a self that is lovable. And that's a self that when we realize it, actually has access to unlimited joy and cannot be touched by any material miseries. The only so-called self that's touched by miseries and the only so-called self that has limits on its happiness are this body and mind, which really have nothing to do with me. As in nothing. At all. Zero. Like I drove a car here today. I drove my son's car here. That car has nothing to do with me. I'm not that car. It's not my identity. Even if it were my car, it's still not me. Now this self is wonderful because it's part of Krishna, the Supreme Wonderful. Krishna is also called Rama. We have Rama in the Hare Krishna mantra. Prabhupada called Krishna the reservoir of all pleasure, where all pleasure comes from. Frankly, even nasty pleasures, any pleasure, comes from Krishna. You can't experience pleasure without Krishna being there. And we are part of Krishna. We are of the same essence, the same substance. We are described in the Vedas as Anandamaya Vyasa. We are pleasure beings. That's our natural state. And I wanted to list some of the qualities of the soul. Actually, there's many qualities, but here I have one nice list of the qualities of the real self. Kind, peaceful, truthful, faultless, magnanimous, non-possessive, a well-wisher to everyone, satisfied, without hankerings, self-controlled, sane, prideless, friendly, poetic, expert. That's qualities that we all have. How could you not be happy if you realize that that's who you are? Wouldn't it be nice to realize, I'm expert, I'm poetic, I'm kind, I'm truthful. And that's actually just who I am. It's not something I had to take a course to learn. It's not something where I had to get training in school or study a self-improvement book. It's just who I am. It's like sugar doesn't have to take a course to be sweet. It's just what it is. So me, the real self, I am kind. Each of us. That's actually what we are. And when one is touching the real self, one feels completely satisfied. One's in a place then where one doesn't require any other source of satisfaction. As I said, the word is Atmarama, one who's satisfied within the self. Boundless transcendental happiness. What does Krishna say? Upon gaining this, he thinks there's no greater gain. Right, so what's the humility part? The humility is, although that's who I am and what I am willingly, knowingly, allowed myself to be covered by a material mind and a material body. Now, thinking about that should be enough to make anybody fully humble. If we're a spiritual, eternal, unharmable, boundlessly joyous, perfect being, and we've made such a foolish choice as to basically jump into a sewer. So, how humble we should be. So both things at the same time. That relishing the self is coupled with also a feeling of deep humility. Of course, materially speaking, what most of us call humility is painful. As soon as I think on the body and the mind, my so-called humility is just a kind of shame or sometimes embarrassment at the behavior and activities of my body and mind. And so most of us, although we consider humility necessary for social interaction, you can't have very many friends if you're arrogant, especially in the Hare Krishna movement, but even in the world in general. So although we make a social nicety out of humble behavior, most of us find our experience of what we think is humility on a material level to be very distressing. It's not something that we think about, you know, okay, to be a saint you have to be humble, and we kind of think, well, maybe someday, somehow. But I don't know if I really like that. But when one has this genuine humility coupled with realization of the actual self, it's part of the joy of the self. Now, how is that? Because one can only come to realization of the self by being willing to take a bath. And one can only be willing to take a bath if one admits that one's dirty. Does that make sense to everybody? Why should you take a bath if you're not dirty? If someone comes up to you and says, hey, don't you think you should take a shower? What are they insinuating? You smell bad. Right? So the process to find the self is one has to take a bath. One has to get off the contamination of thinking, I am this body, I am this mind. And one's only willing to get off that contamination and find the real self when one admits that I'm covered with material desires. And to admit that is humility. Does everybody follow that? One has to be willing to admit, oh, I stink. Oh. And I wanted to be stinky. I did this to myself. And only when you admit that are you willing to take a bath. And only when you take a bath can you find joyousness. Therefore, they go together. And that real humility is part of the joy. It's not a miserable thing. How do we do this? So far this has all been theoretical, ideas. So if now any of you are interested in practically how to do this instead of just a theoretical construct. So just like the chanting that we were doing. Of course, we have two main ways that we're chanting. One is in a group, which is the most efficacious and fun. After all, it's music. Everybody likes music, singing and dancing. Everywhere in the world, in every culture of the world, festivals are accompanied by music. And even there are some groups who don't like dancing, but at least they have music. Even if they don't like instruments, at least they sing. Isn't it? Some religions who say no instruments, but at least they do sing. So chanting with singing, with instruments, with dancing, where we all aid each other, as I was saying earlier, like a flock of birds are aiding each other. And then there's private chanting, usually on beads for counting, as a personal meditation. And this chanting is very simple. This Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, 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 Hare Hare. So Ram and Krishna, they're names for the Supreme Absolute Truth as masculine and Hare as feminine. So what we are doing when we are saying Hare Krishna is we are saying, let me again regain my original nature. Let me remember who I am. Let me be giving in love to the source of who I am, the Supreme Spirit, in realization of myself as spirit. And let me remove all these unnecessary contaminations. I am this, I am that. All based on the body and the mind. I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm old, I'm young, I'm fat, I'm skinny, I'm American, I'm Indian, I'm Hispanic, I'm Chinese, I'm smart, I'm not so smart. Whatever. I'm quiet, I'm bold, I'm cautious, I'm not so cautious. I'm none of these things. I may have some role in this world, okay, fine. But it's not me. It's just a drama. I'll do the drama nicely, but I'm not the character in the drama. So this chanting is the most direct, effective, and happy way to come to this realization. It doesn't cost anything. We don't charge any money for the mantra. Anybody can chant it. You can chant it anywhere, anytime, any place, any situation. Whether you're purified or unpurified or even having passed through all situations, doesn't matter. Om apavitra apavitra vasara stavam vidopiva yatsvara pundari kaksham yabayan yantra suci. Doesn't matter. You may be materially qualified or unqualified. You may come from this background or that background. You may be a perfectly honest and moral and upright person, and you may be a rogue. Doesn't matter. You can just chant this mantra, and by chanting this mantra, naturally everything else will come. Of course, if you want to make the chanting of the mantra more effective quickly, then it is very helpful to lead a pious life, especially to give up violence to oneself and violence to others. Therefore, we say no eating meat, fish, or eggs, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and no gambling. Those are all forms of violence, either to ourselves or to others, or both. So the more one can lead a life of peace, the faster and the easier one's realization of the mantra will be. And then to engage in activities of the real self. So in the world, we have activities based on the false self, the self that we're never going to be able to rejoice in. We have activities, oh, because I'm a man, I do this. Or because I'm a husband, I do this. Or because I'm an American, I do this. Or because I work for this company, I do this. We have all of these activities based on our false identity. But we can start doing activities based on our real identity. So this Hare Krishna movement, this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, is here to give people an opportunity to do activities based on the real identity. To hear about spiritual topics, to talk about spiritual topics, to remember them, to do service here at this temple. There's so much service that can be done, and that's done on the spiritual platform. And even our material activities, according to the false identity, can become the activities of the real identity. If we remember that everything I'm doing for the sake of spiritual advancement. So to do that requires some guidance, requires that one accept a spiritual master, a spiritual teacher. The details of that are too complex for me to go in the next couple minutes. But at least the principle is there, that even our activities as a mother, father, son, daughter, husband, wife, student, employee, employer, citizen, which are all based on the body and the mind, even those can actually become activities of the real self, to awaken the real self, if done in a particular way. This is explained in the Bhagavad Gita 4.24. And as I say, there is a science to doing that. So by chanting this mantra, by doing activities of the real self, by spiritualizing even the activities of the false self, then one will come to realize who I am. And then we can really like ourselves without having to take any kind of self-help course. And without worrying about having pride. Without worrying about arrogance, because this kind of self-love is also full of pridelessness. And then we can achieve what Krishna says here, boundless transcendental happiness and actual freedom from all material miseries. Not because they all go away, but because they will no longer affect us. So we have a little bit of time for discussion and questions. Comments, corrections, additions, subtractions. Did I make it that clear that there's no questions? Or did I bore you all to death? Yes, sir. What was the verse that was discussed? Chapter 6, 20 to 23. Should I read the English again? Yes. In the stage of perfection called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness, realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulty. This indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. And mostly I was talking about relishing and rejoicing in the self. Atmatushti, which means to be satisfied with the self, Atmaram, to take pleasure in the self, and Atmarati, which means to love the self. Anybody else have any questions? On theory or practice? No. So, yes?
How does one find a balance between humility and confidence and being able to within our life and our service and our maintenance to kind of feel that we're capable yet developing.
So humility really is just a synonym for truth. So the real essence of humility is I'm a grade A number one fool for having a material body and mind. Now that has absolutely nothing to do with the capabilities that I demonstrate in this life. There's just no relationship between the two. And whatever capabilities I demonstrate in this life, am I independent in having them? How quickly could I lose any or all of them? Instantly, right? And I could lose any or all of my abilities, talents, etc., no matter how much I want to hold on to them. I could lose them without, I don't have to die to lose them. I mean, like, there's so many ways that I could lose any of them, which means that they don't belong to me. That's pretty simple. So it's kind of hard. It's just like, as I said, I drove my son's car here. So if I'm proud of his car, that's kind of funny. It's not mine. So how do you be proud of something that's not yours? And how do you know it's not yours? It can be taken away over your protestations at any moment instantly. So it's just being honest. Humility is just being honest. That whatever talents and abilities I'm demonstrating in this life, they're borrowed. But the real sense of the real humility comes from I really made a mistake. I'm serious to say, not a trivial one.
And it wasn't just something I did in some other time. But unless I'm experiencing boundless joy right now, then I'm making that mistake right now, because boundless joy is there, it's me. So the moment that I really want, Prabhupada says in the first canto, that the unhappy materialist can get free simply by desiring to do so. So if I'm still experiencing any material miseries or any bounds to my joy, or if I consider, if what I think is happiness is like eating some good ice cream, if I'm calling that happiness, if I'm not really experiencing boundless spiritual joy, then I'm making that mistake at this moment, not just some fall I had in another eon. And as I say, if you really think about that, you can't help but be humble. It's just impossible. You can't maintain a sense of arrogance. But it has nothing to do with what we're capable of. Humility has nothing to do with our material capabilities. That's, illusion is very clever at telling us that something is different from what it is. That's the definition of illusion, that which is not. That's what Maya, the word Maya, means. So the scriptures say everyone has to practice humility. It's an essential doorway to spiritual realization. And then Maya says, oh, I agree. And this is what humility is. And you look at that and say, that's not very great. That's not very desirable. And so you don't even try for the real thing because she's put up a false thing. So if you think what humility is saying you're poor when you have millions of dollars in the bank, that's just lying. How could humility be a lie? Humility is the truth. So the truth is, although I'm a very spiritually powerful and wonderful being, I'm very small. I'm not very significant in a certain sense. I'm significant in the sense that I am very important and a very important role that only I can do. What's the word? Irreplaceable. I have an important role to play in reality and I'm irreplaceable. There's only one of me and only I can play that role. So in that sense, I'm important. But it's a very small role. It's important, but it's a very small role. And the truth is that whatever material abilities I have, they're not mine. They're borrowed. I can lose them at any moment, and I will definitely lose all of them. The question is just when and how, not if. And that although I'm such a wonderful being, I intentionally am an illusion. None of that has anything to do with how good of a cook I am or how well I can drive a car or something. Humility doesn't mean you say, oh, I don't know how to drive, when you do. That's a very reasonable definition of humility. Is that all right? Yes.
Can you explain having humility and low self-esteem?
Low self-esteem is when you think that you're the body and the mind, or the mind, and you look at them and go yuck, which you should because they're yucky, and you think that's you, and so you're depressed about it. That's low self-esteem. Which is not particularly helpful. So the body and mind are yucky, that's true, but they're also useful. Yes?
He was mentioning pure thought, pure mind, right? For some time, we go pure mind, right? When we go real world, we change. So how be 24 hours pure mind or pure heart?
You have asked one of the top five questions that are asked in the world at Hare Krishna gatherings. Very nice. How do I do it all the time? So sometimes we experience a little bit of it. How do we keep it? Right? Isn't that the question? Sometimes we get a little glimpse. Ah, I'm a spiritual being. And I really want to love and serve Krishna. And there's great joy, and then it goes away. Where'd that go? Something like curtains over a window, you know, the sun's outside, and someone just pulls the curtain a little bit and then closes it again. So how do you do it all the time? So this is a long answer. I'll try to make it very quick. As long as we have a desire to try to be the lords and master of matter, we need to be an illusion, because we're not the lords and master of anything. So as long as I have that desire, I need to be an illusion. And as long as I'm an illusion, I cannot experience all the time. I can only get little glimpses of who I am at best. So the real question is to develop a strong desire to always be in the truth. And Krishna explains this very nicely in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. He says, at least through the activities of bhakti, like we were talking about activities of the soul, by doing that, you will attain peace. Once you have peace, then you can practice fixing your mind on the mantra, on the deity, on the form of the Lord. When you practice fixing your mind, your desire will be so strong that then you'll be able to be steady. So you want to work at increasing two things: your peace, which comes from detachment, and your desire. Everything's based on desire. Eko bhavanam yo vidadah bhikama. We are an illusion because we want to be an illusion. And we see the truth when we want to see the truth. Although this illusion is very difficult, it can be removed very easily by Krishna. He removes it when we want it to be removed. Prabhupada says, simply by desiring to do so. You can say, well, I desire to do so. But do you really? Just like so many people say, well, I desire to make $1 million. And if you ask most people, would you like to have $1 million? They'd say, sure. You say, okay, this is what you have to do. Then probably everybody wouldn't say sure anymore. I met one of my former students recently in Los Angeles. When he came to my school, he was 5 years behind in school. And I had a number of students come to me like that. And they would always say, I want to catch up. And I would say, all right. Here's what you have to do. Now, the majority of them, after 2 weeks on that kind of a program, would quit. But this was a student who stuck with it. And so in 2 years in school, he caught up 5 years, plus those 2 years. So basically, he gained 7 years of education in 2 years. That's me. That's, I really want to do it. So there's a difference between, yeah, I'd like to have $1 million, and doing what's required to get it. So you say, yes, I'd like to know the truth. So an intense desire. The entire purpose of the whole process we're doing, everything, according to Bhagavad Gita 12.9, is simply to increase our desire. Because as soon as we desire truth, and we desire nothing but the truth and only the truth, and we're willing to get rid of any illusion, then we will have the truth. Now, in the beginning of that process, should I tell you this or not? I might scare some of you away. Should I be honest, even though I might scare some of you away?
Yes.
Okay, nobody was honest with me in the beginning. It'll hurt a little bit. When the false self first starts getting peeled away, at first it will be difficult because we're attached to the false self, thinking it's me. You'll feel like you're losing yourself. It'll be scary. It'll be painful. And then it'll be delightful. It's like if you've got some really dirty, sweaty, yucky clothes on. You know, maybe peeling them off will not be very pleasant. But once they're off and you take a shower, it'll be wonderful. And you say, why did I wait so long to take those things off? So especially in the beginning, we tend to resist the very process we say we want to do. And therefore, coming to steadiness for most people takes quite a while. 10, 15, 20 years. It doesn't have to. It could take 10, 15, 20 minutes. But we generally are resisting exactly what we say we want. We're saying we want it on the one hand, and we're fighting it on the other, because we're afraid. If I give up my attachments, what will I have? I won't get any pleasure. I won't have this. I won't have that. But after a certain point, it becomes delightful. Because the real self is actually delightful, and the false self is not delightful. Getting rid of it is quite a relief. All right? What could you do to increase your desire? Take up the process of bhakti, which you look like you already know what it is since you have your hand in the Gita. So take up the process of bhakti with attention, with thoughtfulness. Whatever you're doing in spiritual life, do it deeply. Don't do it superficially. Don't do it as a religious ritual or as a cultural practice. But do it deeply. When you do it deeply, you will start to see truth. When you see truth, you will see two things. Well, more than that, but for the purpose of this discussion. You will see your real self, and you'll see how dirty you are. You'll see both. And at first you mostly see the dirt, because we're really, 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 really dirty. And there's a diamond under the sewage, but at first you'll see mostly sewage. Have courage. And be willing to deal with whatever you need to deal with at that time. So by engaging in this process, you'll see things as they are. You'll see who you really are, what you really are. You'll see what your attachments are. You'll see what your contaminations are. In the beginning, mostly you'll see the dirt. It scares a lot of people away. Clean it. If you keep doing that, pretty soon you'll see what's under the dirt, which is really lovely. So I understand this is the whole trajectory of the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna gets close to Krishna, right? He says to Krishna, I want to be your disciple. And he's really serious about it. Then Krishna reveals everything. Krishna reveals who Arjuna is as a soul. He reveals the nature of illusion. He reveals himself. And then at the end of all of that, what does Krishna say? Now you can?
Do as you like.
Do as you like. One person told me that was their favorite verse. They say, I follow the Bhagavad Gita, I follow that verse. Krishna says, okay, now you do what you like. You can choose truth or illusion. He says, if you choose illusion, you'll suffer. If you choose truth, you'll be happy. But you can choose. Choose truth. And then you lose the illusion, you start to see the truth. So do spiritual activities with attention, with concentration, with meditation, with devotion. And if you didn't for the last 5 minutes, start doing it now, never mind. The mind will say, well, I haven't been paying attention for the last hour, so now it's almost all over, why bother? Just start now. And if you blew it, then start again now. And start again now. And start again now. And just don't listen to the mind. Remember, it's like a wild animal. Just leave it alone. Just ignore it. Let it go where it wants to go. I'm going to do it now. Do what we're doing with attention, with care, with love. And when we do that, things will be revealed. When they're revealed, choose truth. Even if you think it will hurt to choose the truth. Even if you're scared. And if you're scared, ask for courage. Say, Krishna, please give me courage to choose the truth. If you consistently do your spiritual activities with attention and you consistently choose truth, you will come to steadiness very quickly. Is that all right?
Thank you.
Easy to say, hard to do. But if you practice it, it gets easier and easier and easier. Okay? If you practice doing things with attention and you practice choosing truth, because as soon as you do spiritual things with attention, you will see the truth. That I guarantee you. You'll see things as they are. Your vision will be clear. And if you consistently choose the truth, it will go very quickly. If you're afraid and you keep choosing the old illusions, it will go very slow. It can even take Bhagavanam Jagannam Lante. I'm not going to translate that. It can even take that. Is that right? Anything else? Yes. Well, it starts manifesting itself, as Krishna says, that all the gates of the body are illumined by knowledge. So one will feel happiness in all of one's sensory activities. One will start to feel as if one's life is full of light. And then it will manifest in a feeling of great love for the self, for the real self, for Krishna, and for all living entities. Real love, not a sentimental, wishy, maudlin, but an actual selfless love. An ability to give to everyone because you'll have an unlimited source of givable love coming from the self. Krishna says, one will not have a need to depend on any other living being. Your relationships with all other living beings will be on the platform of freedom. Whether they do anything for you or not will be irrelevant. You'll have everything you need from within. You'll see everything as it actually is. You'll be able to use everything rightly. You'll be able to use everything and do everything and have all of your dealings such that it will increase your spiritual knowledge. And a boundless joy will not just be like, it won't be boring. There'll be a variety of emotions. Just like even material happiness, which in comparison to real happiness isn't happiness at all, but for the sake of understanding. So even material happiness, people see scary movies and sad movies to enjoy. Don't they? You say to someone, did you like the movie? Oh yeah, it was good. So boundless transcendental joy also has variety. It's not all vanilla. There's many, many flavors of spiritual joy. And those flavors are the original counterparts. What we experience here is even grief and fear and that we sometimes enjoy. And ultimately, it will manifest in the awakening of one's eternal form and activities and relationship with Krishna. Is that right? Okay, so I think now we're going to have kirtan. Is that correct? And then prasadam. So now we're going to do, if any of you are here for the first time, now we're going to do some more group chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, and then we're going to have a sanctified vegetarian feast. Thank you very much.